Hello. Welcome to Truth Be Told Transformation. I'm Bonnie Burkert. We are here to share tools for your transformation so that you can live your highest truth. And I am very excited today to speak with somebody who has delivered some incredible tools, and that's Ramania Dean Thomas. He's a master herbalist specializing in Chinese tonic herbs. Welcome, Ramania.
Thank you, Bonnie. It's been a while. We're actually really good friends. We've known each other for quite a while.
I know. It's incredible. It's really true. I first met Ramania at a wonderful event, and he was serving tea, and a beautiful elixir.
Yeah.
And I personally have always been very fascinated in herbal healing of all different types, but this is very specialized. And if you're watching on YouTube, those of you who are on the podcast, I hope you'll come over to the YouTube channel to see. We've got a beautiful piece of reishi mushroom here, just as one of the first things we could talk about, Ramania, as far as what tonic herbs are.
Well, the Chinese have a saying called, they believe that their wild history goes back to approximately 30,000 BC. When and now that's been bolstered by sort of verified by a book I read recently by an Oxford professor called People, Plants, and Genes, where he described how they have found tombs in ancient China from 20,000 to 30,000 BC, and they found the remains of the herbs I'm going to talk about in there.
Fantastic.
And so, you know, we've talked about herbs going back to the, you know, Edwin Papyrus in Egypt from 3150 BC, but now we're talking, you know, much, much further behind that.
Wow, that's incredible.
And so they believe that these ancient people who lived, particularly in a mountain in northern Korea called Mount Chongbai, they had discovered long ago that these plants made them able to climb the mountains more vigorously and live longer, and started to document them. In fact, the first documentation of any herb is thought to be the herb called eucomia bark. It's a tree bark, and the story goes that that there were people saw a deer or an animal get a bone fracture, and then would go to a tree and chew on the bark, and then they would watch that animal, and the bone would heal up quicker, and then they would, somebody in their clan got a bone fracture, so they went and got the bark and tried it, and their bone healed quicker. And somebody wrote on a piece of bamboo, bone healed quicker. And that's where it started, probably way back then.
Right.
And so basically, in a nutshell, we've got about 20,000 years of R&D going on and empirical observation to lead to what is today surely the most refined and sophisticated materia medica, along with Ayurvedic medicine.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. And for people that may not know Ayurveda, that is that's Indian. That comes from an Indian tradition. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot, in fact, I know this from yoga studies, that a lot of influence came from China to India. So it would be interesting.
There's
to
a
know.
Big debate there.
Yeah.
You know, there's
what came first?
Yeah, the Indians believe they came first. I don't think the Chinese really. I haven't heard them talk about how they came first, but I mean, it seems like 20,000 BC. But hey, you know, that could have been happening in India too, because people were, you know, all over the place were doing this. Surely Africa as well.
Yes.
But what we know is worldwide herbalism. We can assume it goes back to about 20,000 BC and beyond. So by the time the very first books were written that described herbs. In particular, China, the first book that was written supposedly by a guy named Shen Nong, although I'm sure this is a compilation of many thousands of people's work and observation. And it's called the Divine Farmer's Almanac, because he was thought to have invented the plow and farming and all kind of stuff, too. This guy, Shen Nong, pretty important figure in history.
So we call him the Divine Farmer's?
The Divine Farmer's Almanac.
Very interesting.
Shen Nong's Materia Medica, written in 2975 BC is when the Chinese believe it was first released. So in China, there's giant statues to this guy, like 100 foot tall, like big stone marble statues up in the mountains of Shen Nong that they really love. You know, they revere their herbalists as some of their spiritual and icons in China are herbalists. And as you know, there's legends now that the Chinese believe that some of these people attained immortality, that they became so adept at using these herbs and living according to nature way back then, when there was lots of diamagnetism in the earth, the soil was powerful, right? The ecology was at its best. And so humans were living there, and they found these herbs that made them all that much more powerful. and they were said to have attained immortality. So if you go back and look at Chinese folklore, like our deities in America, are in the West, their deities were, many of them were herbalists in my lineage.
That's so incredible.
Yeah.
Why do you think that China figured that out and we don't really have that same reverence here in the West?
Well, we might have, you know. I mean, our indigenous people here had great knowledge, which it's just my theory that it might have come from over there, over the Bering Strait.
Oh, true.
And from way back, because the Native American people had incredible plant knowledge. And in the 1800s, there was a system of colleges in America, a network of colleges called the Eclectic Schools. There were 111 of them, I believe. And they were all over America in the 1800s, and they were teaching Native American herbology, and they allowed women and people of color to go there and get
incredible.
And get their degrees, diplomas to teach to be doctors. And this was well known. It was the Eclectic Doctors and the Eclectic Schools. This was all over America in the 1800s. They were practicing Native American herbology primarily. But surely by now, if they'd been allowed to continue on, they would be also have had integrated Ayurvedic and Chinese by now, and we would have a incredibly powerful, worldwide and very effective and sophisticated herbal system for the mass population at this time. But the AMA came along in 1911 and kind of started to put
Yikes.
A stop to it.
Well, that's a whole nother episode, everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to go back and ask you specifically how you got involved in the Chinese herbs. I mean, you're from the States, right? You're from Kentucky originally, is that correct?
I am from Shively, Kentucky.
Yeah, so you've got some, you know, incredible tradition there. And
yeah.
That's not technically Appalachia anymore, but right. So that region of the U.S. So, but tell me, why Chinese tonic herbs for you, and really, what's distinctive? Do they have something special over there that we don't seem to have growing here?
Well, the herbs that the Chinese use in their system are grown worldwide, except that. Many of them are thought to have evolved there. So you go to the place of the biological origin of the plant itself, and you find the most powerful species. And so that's why we use the herbs that are grown in northern Manchurian China in a landscape similar to Maine, way up in the northeast. It's northern Manchurian province. And then over into the northern part of South Korea, a lot of the herbs are grown in there, and they're grown very purely. And that's I'd like to get that out right now, because a lot of people come to me and go, is this stuff tainted with chemicals and metals and everything? No, the Chinese are very fierce about that. The herbs are grown in protected regions of their biological origin. They have a designation of that they call Didao, which means that this herb came from its place of biological origin. And when you go to those places, the Chinese government has cordoned them off and protected those whole regions from any pesticide use.
Fabulous.
Yeah, so
that's
it's actually
incredible.
More sophisticated than our organics programs here. Yeah.
Okay, that's really great to know.
Yeah.
Hey, so let's go back to origin. Mm-hmm. So once I saw a lecture with you, and Romania has all kinds of amazing talks, classes. You'll find out more on his website, which we're listing for you. And now you told me about the origin, how it is thought that some mushrooms came here.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, okay, mycologists are the body of scientists that studies mushrooms, and they will pretty much agree that the mushroom family is extraterrestrial. They do not appear to have earthly biological origins. And so I'll show you my mushroom, my reishi that I found on a tree in Louisville, Kentucky, walking down the road.
Really?
I was parking my car on Cherokee Road and got out and looked down, and this thing was on the tree, and I just went and broke it off. And this is like 5 years ago. It's still good.
It's beautiful.
Maybe longer
than
that.
It's like a flower.
Yeah.
And that's reishi.
This is a reishi mushroom. So this is herb is very, very important in our discussion, and it's also very important in Chinese herbology. It's considered the most important herb of all. It has two primary claims to fame. One is it's an immune tonic. So you know what that implies right now. We need to be building up our immune systems, and it's pretty much a given that, you know, anything we can take right now to build antioxidants in our blood and general immunity is important. But also it's known to affect spiritual alchemy. It's to affect the mind, to kind of see a reverence of life. And that's what we've really got to do in our civilization right now, is open up that, kind of plug back into that reverence of life. And so now let's go to some of the, you talked about the origins. This is what's fascinating to me about this. The mushrooms, as we know about psychotropic mushrooms in particular, and this is not psychotropic, but it causes your mind to just kind of become part of the all again. You're no longer, I'm in my little ego, you know. You're like, wow, this whole thing is like, I'm part of it, you know. It's great. And so the Chinese have a saying, goes way back, that reishi initiates benevolent cycles of health in your life. Like benevolence starts to occur when you take it. And it did for me. It did for me. I discovered it in 1998. I was really down. I was searching for my soul. I thought I was possessed, and I read all the religions. And every time I would finish a religious book, I would close it and go, yeah, I feel better. And then within a month or so, I'd be kind of like back in my little anger and all that. And it was this, and I'd been praying. In 1998, I met my teacher, Master Herbalist Ron Teagarden, and he had these all over his parlor. And something just told me to take it. So I started taking a lot of this, about three times the recommended amount on his bottle. And it was about the fifth day, I woke up, and my light in my room was different. There were like, it was just that there were little mycelial strings of light, you know, everywhere. And I said, oh my God, the oppression is gone. And my whole life started to change dramatically. The oppression was gone. I mean, it isn't like we have challenges. We have karma. We have baggage. We have psychic and spiritual baggage. We have past that we have to deal with. It isn't like you can take a secret pill and make it go away. But what it is you can... you can take something that makes you see it from a benevolent viewpoint, and you can start to deal with it in a way that it takes away that negative stamp that you feel is holding you down, you know.
It's true.
And so that you can start to deal with your dharma, your karma, your destiny in a way that is more trusting, more positive. And this mushroom seems to do that. And so this is indicated in why the Chinese civilization was so advanced way back. I mean, there's a book called Robert Temple called The Genius of China. You can get it for $3 on, you know, used on Amazon. And it's a picture book of all the stuff they invented. The Chinese invented everything. But their medicine, they consider to be their greatest gift to the world, their herbal medicine, because it goes back to the very origins of their people. Their deities were doing it. And that today, the Chinese government protects it and honors it, and they recently dedicated it as a gift to humanity. Now, this is probably the topmost of those gifts that are in that whole Materia Medica. And so when we take this, it plugs us back in. Now we go to your question about extraterrestrial, right? All right, because I didn't want to get off on a tangent and forget what you asked.
I knew you were coming back around to that.
Well, so in the original Earth, or molding of biology on Earth, there are three kingdoms primarily that cause the molding of earthly biology. One is algae, bacteria, and fungi, the spores of fungi. I studied this a lot. I wrote a book called Threshold of the Fourth Chakra, which I hope to have more copies printed soon. It's hard to find. I don't have many of them out there, but it's a very interesting book. It talks all about this and everything, the origins of Chinese medicine too. Pretty much, I believe our discussion today will cover, you know, comprise my book, Threshold of the Fourth Chakra, which if those of you watching, if you want to get in touch with me, I can get you one eventually. Anyway, in there, I discussed how the scientists of today, beginning with Lynn Margulis and some other what they call astrobiologists and then microbiologists working together, determined a theory or came up with a theory that algae and bacteria are the original substrates of earthly life, so that they both came from outer space, and this is known. So that's why Lynn Margulis is, and they are called astrobiologists, because all of these spores and these things are blowing all over the cosmos. So algae still blows in today. In fact, in the 1980s, there was a phenomenon called the Red Rain of Kerala in India, where it was raining red, and everybody went and they thought it was the blood of Mary, you know, coming down, the Christians there. And then these microbiologists went in and got samples and found it was an extraterrestrial algae that they'd never seen. It was blowing in from who knows where. Where was it coming from? That's where you start to get into these questions, right?
Yeah.
Which I'm going to come back to. Okay, so then Lynn Margulis and her astrobiology friends come up with this theory of symbiosis, where they say that algae were all over the earth, and the algae were very important in producing the atmosphere, the oxygen, because they were proliferating in our oceans through mitosis, and that's splitting in half, and that's how they reproduce. They were proliferating, you know, very abundantly, and today they are too because of global warming. Algae are getting very bad in our waterways, overproducing. But they were probably the first living life forms on Earth, and as they consume carbon dioxide, so the atmosphere is very high in carbon dioxide because of all the volcanoes and everything, right. And their waste product is oxygen. They poop oxygen, and so for over 3 billion years. The algae created our atmosphere, oxygen. Now,
incredible.
Then it came to a period where it's called the Cambrian explosion, about half a billion years ago, where they had produced a sufficient atmosphere of oxygen. This allowed bacteria, which are also extraterrestrial, to then, according to Lynn Margulis, bacteria penetrated the permeable fatty cell wall of the algae for refuge and started to form colonies inside, which in time, through intelligence, became the mitochondria and the nuclei of cells. And somehow, and here's where my discussion, I think, gets another level of phantasmagorica, is that they believed it somehow, and they still don't know how, but those cells started to, what you call, differentiate. So suddenly there was the part that said, well, I'll be the tail and I'll be the flagella. I'll be the flagella and I'll be the eating part and I'll be the grabbing part, right? And they don't know how this happened. You know, there was some intelligence. Well, they're missing the third kingdom that came in from outer space. Fungal spores. Fungus affect our minds. So fungi are the seeds of consciousness. They exist all over the universe. Lynn Margulis and her pals forgot to include that, okay, I'll continue with my theory. As the algae and the bacteria began to form their symbiotic relationship, their very first life forms were called stromatolites. And they formed these big hamburger-like pile-shaped things of a mixture of algae and fungus. And when they would die back on seashores, and there are fossils of stromatolites now. There's a bunch of them off the coast somewhere in Australia, yeah. and they're fossilized, and so they represent the very first life, you know, congregation of life that's fossilized. Well, here's what happened in my theory. Suddenly, these giant fungal mounds show up too, which Paul Stamets talks about. They found some fossils of those as well. These big, look like big rocket ship shaped things, and they're everywhere too. So the fungi were kind of going, "Hey, look at us! You know, what about us? Right?" Well, okay. Then what happens? What fungi feed on what's called carbon substrates? What happens when the stromatolites are dying back? There's the first carbon substrate material, a carbon breakdown. You know, they're creating carbon, right?
Okay.
Which is what we're all made of, and trees and all life and all the, when you walk on the ground, all the mulch and everything is all carbon based. So that carbon dieback that becomes humus and becomes, you know, mulch and then humus and then humic acids and all that, that's all breaking down carbon. Well, that's what fungi feed on. They feed on carbon. So the fungi then would penetrate those carbon substrates. And what is their method of distributing their information in their cells is called myceliation, right? And mycelia are these white web-like structures that go through the carbon substrates that when the mycologists and look at it, they say, this looks like a neurological system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they're the mind part. If it weren't for the fungi, everything would be like these big lasagna-shaped things, or just, you know, like algae and bacteria congregating and dying back, and then more and more. But it's the fungi that came in and started to create the neurological systems. So now in forests, the fungi connect all of the tree roots. I mean, they'll take nutrients. If this tree's got sufficient nutrients and this tree is missing, the fungal mycelia will draw nutrients to the missing tree. That is remote consciousness.
Yes.
That's under the ground. That's something we can't do. We don't have that kind of consciousness. And so the algae, the fungi are the consciousness part. Now we step back a little bit. They came from outer space. Mycologists say it. They do not have earthly origins. They are a cosmic seed of consciousness that's blowing around out there, probably all over the place. And here's the situation that, I like to say. When you have algae, and the algae that's on Earth, when they look at the first fossils, that algae is in exactly the same state of evolution as today. That means it came from somewhere else, and it was already in that state of evolution. But it had to have come from a place that's like this. And the mushrooms require carbon substrates to produce their spores, their fruiting bodies. This is the fruiting body or the sexual apparatus. Mm-hmm. This comes up, and then the spores formulate over on top. And then one day, they become very thick, like a brown powder. And then one morning, it's as if this thing goes poof like that, and the spores go into the atmosphere. They blow all over the place. We've got them all over us. They're all over this wall, and they go blow out of our atmosphere and back into outer space and go off and seed some other solar system somewhere else.
Incredible.
But here's the thing is that when for this thing to form, it's mycelia and it's all this and it has to have a carbon substrate that requires the same oxygen, the same moisture, the same sunlight, you know, as we have here, which means planets like this are everywhere. They have to be because of these things travel between all of them. And there was another microbiologist named his book was called Eating the Sun, I really liked this book, but it was some common just sentence he had somewhere that I lost track of. I wish I could find it again, where he said, scientists all agree that the concept of the pine tree, the apple tree, the cypress tree, you know, is a universal cosmic phenomenon. Because you go back to those five basic gases that start everything, they are going to congeal in certain ways that create the substrates that wind up creating algae, wind up creating bacteria, wind up creating fungi. They get together on another plant, they form conscious beings.
Oh my God, it is so incredible and so much to process there. There really truly is. So, okay, are you telling us that we need to be consuming these mushrooms?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
To stay our perfect wellness. And you can tell us a little bit about, is it the three treasures in Chinese medicine that help us understand body, mind, spirit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Well, the first part of that question, yes, absolutely. I believe that the sooner that we can get everybody taking Reishi, it is harmless. It is completely beneficial. It helps your immune system. It has no negative side effects known with its use. But it does kind of like when I talked about the mycelial network being the way that the neurological system functions.
Yes.
It's like we kind of plug back into that. And we must do that as a species. I believe in any planet, when a species comes along that's as intelligent and as mobile and as adaptable as humans are right now, and we rediscover whatever it is that they've got that affects our mental alchemy, we replug and we start a new phase of our evolution as a species, one that is connected to our planet. What happens if we don't do that? Our planet is in peril.
I think we're seeing it right now.
It's imminent. We must. We no longer have a choice.
I agree with you. So this is beyond simple nourishment. I mean, this is truly about a heightened well-being, again, multi-level. So this is not just putting mushrooms on your pizza, everybody. I mean, this is very, very specifically.
You can do that too.
That's true. They probably taste really, really good.
I'm not sure they have a whole lot of.
I mean, people are very interested in mushrooms these days, right? Uh-huh. There was fantastic fungi, the film. I don't know if you happen to have seen
Paul
that.
Paul Stamets.
Right? But I love it that people are wide open to hearing about this. And I just think that these specifically are fascinating and have had firsthand experience with this. I remember when the fires were burning around Los Angeles and our air quality was really bad a couple of years ago, Ramania put a note out to everybody on his socials. I will make it very reasonable for you to get my lung tonic to help us through. And I know I brewed the herbs, so it's a large pot, and you put it, you brew it for 12 hours or maybe 8, and it's in your refrigerator. And I mean, it tastes fine. You're not doing it for the taste, but truly,
it's not bad,
just, it's truly just the nourishment on multi-level. So, talk to us a little bit more about.
And then I haven't forgotten your question about the three treasures, and we can kind of finalize with that a little bit. But Okay. There are, why are herbs and plants and food plants classified differently? Because our food plants come from what we call annual cultivars. So we plant a seed that's oftentimes been cultivated and now genetically manipulated quite often. Mm. We plant that seed in the ground, and it is genetically designed to produce a fruit or a tuber or a stalk or a flower within a certain amount of time, and then within a few months, so that then it very rapidly draws the nutrients up from the and water up from the ground. And this is still soft and pliable, so we can then pick that carrot and we can chew and masticate and salivate that. And humans only have a 24-hour transit time for food, so we have to, the cellulose has to be pretty soft, and we have to be able to masticate it, break it down, and derive the nutrients out of it. And then, the next meal, same thing. Cooking a little bit is helpful because it can also even further break down the cellulose to make it easier for the body to digest. But then, of course, when we overcook, we kill a lot of the properties. Mm-hmm. So there's a very delicate line there, warming things a bit, eating a pretty high raw diet, but warming things sometimes. Certain kinds of starchy foods need to be warmed and eaten hot, cooked a little bit. And then understanding how fats metabolize and everything. But those are all carbohydrates. You know, fats and starches and sugars are all carbohydrates. It's a matter of how they're metabolized. And so we get all that from these annual cultivars that we can eat and digest and assimilate the nutrition very easily. And so that's our food. And as I said, that's been manipulated quite a lot to be sweeter, easier to digest, more proliferant, and now to genetically modified quite often to be able to fend off invasive parasitic organisms.
Yeah.
So that's that. Now, but herbs are classified differently because herbs come from plants called perennials. So a perennial plant means it grew in the Mojave Desert or wherever it came from, and the most potent herbs are oftentimes found growing in inhospitable places. So you've got this plant that is managing to survive the winters, the summers, the spring, hot, cold, freezing in one day, like out in places like the high desert. Those plants can survive all those elements in a day. That means they had to develop more complex genetics and adaptive mechanisms to survive the hot part, the cold part, the wet part, the dry part. And so they become much more complicated inside. And then also, as they become perennial, their stalks need to start to develop. So when they're first born, they're succulent and pliable. But then come fall and winter, they go. Their genetics go, hey, we got to harden ourselves because this winter's coming. And so the cellulite turns into what's called lignin. It's like wood. So now the herb has a wooden stalk. And all of those much more complicated nutrients are some of its genetics and all are ensconced inside that cellulose. And if we then try to cut a piece of this and chew on that lignin cellulose, our body cannot necessarily break that down and assimilate those nutrients. So what long ago with the Chinese and the Ayurvedics and many indigenous peoples figured out was that they saw that the stomach looked kind of like a pot of tea. And they said, if we eat food, it's kind of got to go into this pot of tea and break down. Well, maybe if we put it on a fire, on a flame, and in that pot there, and that's like the stomach, and broke that wood down and drank the essence, what would happen? And that was something that was a quite an important discovery for humanity.
Amazing.
But then when they found out that they would, boil the herbs and break open that cellulose and release those more potent nutrients, more complex polysaccharides, polyphenols, beta glucans, all this stuff, they found that those nutrients weren't hurt by the heating because they're called extremophilic nutrients, extremophiles. Extremophilic nutrients go back to those origins of the extraterrestrial origins when spores and algae and other things came in on meteorites and were, it was burning and these things survived. Otherwise, and algae was in blocks of ice. That's out here. It arrived here probably for bajillions of years out there somewhere in the floating around. How did it survive that long? Because they're called extremophilic. And so these nutrients that this plant take up to adapt itself to the extremes are derived of those extremophilic early origins. That's why when we take this stuff, it increases our adaptability, our resilience, right? Our ability to handle stress, to fend off disease, to heal a wound more rapidly. Our food doesn't have that stuff in it. So that's why it's really important to combine both.
Yeah.
Living food or very as close to living as possible, and really, you know, potent and properly extracted and properly combined combinations of herbs based on the wisdom of the ancient Materia Medicus.
Extremophilic. I think that's the name of my new band.
I like that, yeah.
No, it's incredible. I mean, how aspirational, ultimately,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Just looking, this has been a biology experience here, you know, really getting back down into biology.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to have some basis for an understanding, and this really helps us get to the core of what we're eating and what our planet is providing for us.
Yeah.
I feel like there's something, it's almost like they were, I mean, this is further to me, affirmation that these plants were put on to this planet for us.
Well, in a way, they want us to partake of them. They want us to distribute their seed. They want animals to, you know, consume their fruit, and then the seed passes through their digestive tract and winds up in their feces somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about for them. They want bees to go in there and fondle and get that sweet stuff because their pollen gets all over them, and they shake it off somewhere else. So we're doing it for each other. Yes,
indeed.
They want us. The trees want us to wake up to our divinity, to understand them. But when the tree drops its walnut, it doesn't say, well, only monkeys can have that one, you know. It doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Right? And we shouldn't be doing anything like that either.
But the smart ones pick it up,
well,
right? And maybe we've gotten away from it because it's too easy to go to the store and just get something. I mean, which, of course, in a lot of instances we have to. I mean, we live in a city, so understandable. But
it's there's always a trade-off. It was Plotinus, the Greek philosopher, who said, when you introduce one thing, you by its very nature put its opposite into motion. He was talking about what the Chinese call yin and yang, the two polarity degrees. When one thing is introduced, its opposite is in motion, it must be.
All right. Is that what's happening in 2021, summer of 2021, when this is recorded?
Look at in terms of there's an enlightenment happening. Many people are saying we've got to move into a new level, and then there's other people who are going into anger. So there's that there's that extreme. And we have the choice, you know, which of those routes we want to go. I think knowledge is the key to helping people make that right decision.
No, it's
and
true.
Nutrition.
Well, right. I was going to say, I'm bringing it back to your early days of discovery with this. And you mentioned the word anger. And I think there's a lot of that going on out there, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And but again, you found actual there. They call these tonic herbs. So, I mean, what is the, you know, what, look at the, what that word can mean. And so,
well,
truthfully.
Going back to my origins in it, and I said I was, a lost person. I would have an angry thought before a positive thought. And I'm like, why did I just have a spontaneous angry thought? Mm-hmm. Why can't I have a spontaneous nice thought?
Yeah.
And I was just going through that thing that I think a lot of young men in particular go through where you're fighting this inner anger and you're trying and trying and reading all those books and reading all of the Dhammapada, Bhagavad Gita, the New Testament, everything, trying to figure out, Tao Te Ching, you know, what's going on with me? And then it was tonic herbs. It was Reishi that made the change. But it came when I made a prayer. I made a prayer in 1998. At the time, I actually was already working as a healer. I was a self-proclaimed green juicing therapist. So I would grow the power plants at the Los Angeles Eco Village where I lived. Hi, Lois Arkin, a great mentor of the Los Angeles Eco Village. And I was growing the plants, and I would go to people's homes. It started in 1994. I'd go to people's homes who had cancer and was making them green juices and just they would have many, many benefits from that. But at one point I had a woman who had an autoimmune disease, and I went into a meltdown because she said, look, your green juice is I feel better, but my legs are freezing up worse, and the doctors are telling me not to stimulate my immune system. And something in me said, I just can't understand that kind of logic. There's got to be some other explanation for how we can help this woman with that, and by at the same time not suppressing her immunity because she could wind up getting the flu or something and dying from that.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a desperate prayer, I was in the morning and I was waking up in my bed at Eco Village there, and I looked at my ceiling. I had this green ceiling with lots of cracks in it. I painted like lime green. I was looking at it and I said, God, give me a teacher. I need a teacher. I need a, and then I set these conditions. I was like, but I want to learn the deepest thing there is. That's it. And well, that very night, I went out to play some guitar somewhere. I play guitar as well, and I went to play at the Besant Lodge. Annie Besant, one of my major heroes. If you don't know about Annie Besant, go to Wikipedia and read her life story.
Yeah,
it's fascinating.
Incredible.
Yeah, and I was going to speak in a chapel that she created in the late 1800s up in Beechwood. That's still there.
Yes, my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know where the little Besant chapel?
Yeah, right around the corner.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
I was asked to go there and play guitar in the year 1998. The night of the morning that I prayed for a teacher, I played my guitar. There's about 10 people there. And then after I played, they said, now, folks, Master Herbalist Ron Teagarden is here to speak. And I was like, here comes this guy through the crowd. And I had known of him because I had his book that I bought in 1986. I bought his first book after going to China. I went to China with my then Chinese wife, which we won't go into all that detail. But I really started tonic herbalism in 1986 in China, in 1985 and 1986. So there he is. There's the guy who wrote the book. And I said, sir, I'm a fan. He said, come tomorrow. And I went the next day. And he made me his apprentice for 8 years.
That's how I
learned this.
Such a beautiful story.
Traditional 8-year master pupil apprenticeship. That's what it is that you have to do in our lineage is to be, you know, to really be real, you know. And I'm so fortunate. This guy from Shively, Kentucky, man, you know, playing hillbilly guitar in the Besant Lodge. And suddenly I'm...
Your prayer was answered, Romania, and
yeah.
I will say he is the real deal, everyone. So I hope you have a chance to connect. There's so much more to talk about. Would you like to leave us with any parting words?
And how much time do we have?
Oh, I don't know. Tony Sweet is producing this episode, and he's letting you roll.
Okay. you asked about the three treasures earlier, so
yes,
I always like to
that.
Make sure I keep context of
yes,
with
please.
Your questions. Okay, the three treasures are the three energies of life, the three foundational energies. According to, in our lineage is called the Gate of Life. It is a lineage that focuses on tonic herbs from China. It is started in 3000 BC, and in that time, they developed this philosophy called the three treasures. And they found, after just determining that there were these two forces called yin and yang that hold everything together, that create the dynamic interface that is evolution, then they recognize that living organisms have three energies. One is called jing, and that's the body itself, the cells of the body itself, and its capacity to reproduce. So that's where we have all of the sexual energies mm-hmm. and everything, and the actual body itself is called jing. The second energy is called qi. That is the animation, the sunlight that we absorb through the food. We gather that qi through what we eat and through the sunlight and through the breathing that gives us animation to function, to metabolize the food, the qi that we've gathered as food into energy. We call ATP, right? Adenosine triphosphate, right? That's what we're using right now to move. That's all qi. So we would simply call it our daily energy needs. Jing, the body itself, qi, its ability to be animated. And then the third treasure is called Shin, and that is the spirit. What do we give back? What do we radiate back out? You know, our auric field, our kinetic energy back, right? Our electricity. That is Shin. Now, I think I feel so fortunate to have made that prayer that night in 1998 and to have been given a system of healing and learned over 8 years with the master that places a third of its emphasis on our spiritual health. And I'm very, very grateful for that. I would love to help everybody have a robust body, vital sexual energies, live a long life, you know, have a nice shape, good, you know, nice skin, all that. Great, fine. I'm happy to do that. But if the spirit part weren't there, that would just be materialism. I wouldn't be interested. I really wouldn't. And so we tonify those three energies to be in harmony. The word tonify comes from a Greek word meaning to tune the strings of an instrument into harmony.
Amazing.
I love that word.
I love
it's
that word.
It's maybe my favorite word in existence that humans have developed. tonify, to tune the strings of your instrument. Your instrument is unique. And we are Taoist in our approach. And Taoism is not a religion. It's a philosophy that says you are a unique organism. Even if you were born, if you had a twin who was born a minute after you, you're still different. You still have different past lives. You have different karma from those past lives. So you're not going to be exact carbon copies of each other no matter what. That is your uniqueness. That's your Tao. But what the Chinese did over those thousands of years was they found ways for us to understand our commonalities within the Tao and how we can help each other tune our instrument perfectly. So you, being a woman, has oftentimes women have more what we call a yin constitution, which is a tendency to hold water a little bit, a tendency to be the silent one who's absorptive. We understand that. So we tonify your energies to balance that. Men tend to have what we call a yang energy. We can dry up and get dehydrated inside, and we can tend to get liver can have effects of getting blood toxic. We don't exchange blood the way women do, and all that. So we would then tonify a man a slightly different way, you know, but still we're unique. I mean, we're 99% the same as all other life, and they understood how to tonify. Though in balance the three energies going to the body, that's the anti-aging herbs, mm-hmm. you know, the herbs that fortify our sexual energies, our reproductive energies. And there's this big taboo about our sexual energies. You kidding me? That's how we're all here. That's how we our body's a reproductive it's organism.
Yeah.
There's no reason why we
a creative force, right?
Even think in terms of suppressing those energies. No, you tonify those energies and then you use them appropriately. That's the key to longevity and youth. And to healthy offspring, so that we produce new generations of humans that are strong and can have adaptability to the stresses that are coming, that are more increasing now, that have more immunity to all of the toxic elements out there. So our children have to have a lot of that jing. Jing is in the food and in the herbs we take them. So there are herbs that tonify jing. They're so important. My namesake herb, Romania, it tonifies jing. So you can give it to a person who just seems to have a weak constitution, who doesn't seem to be interested in things, who doesn't quite know their destiny and not quite excited about it. You give them herbs like Romania, Hosho Wu, Astragalus, Goji, Shizandra. These herbs tonify jing, that energy. And then if that person, you want them to have strong procreative energies, like you have a couple that wants to produce a healthy child, you give them yang jing herbs like epimedium and sistanch and in eucomia, you know, that then, you know, help to build up that yang energy. And my new line called at my site rdeanthomas.com, I have formulas for all of these to tonify those energies. And then when we go to qi, that's how we help maintain a nice shape and metabolize fluids and not get over, you know, not have our hips bloating out and things like that. Help qi flowing, warm hands and feet, glowing skin, upright qi, easy menstrual period for women because the blood has a lot of qi in it. And then when we come to Shin, we tonify the spirit. And it's amazing how things like this can tonify the spirit. You know, I mean, yes, we do have to pursue a healthy body. We have to pursue tonifying jing and qi in order to have the full equation. The body needs to be balanced. But then when we combine that with balancing and tonifying the spirit, we have an incredibly full life of adventure and reverence.
It's so beautiful. And that now, that if that isn't transformation, I don't know what is. And that was my goal with the show, is to let people know the some of these incredible, incredible formulas that exist for us. They're right here. They're not just from China. They actually, some of them grow here. And Romania, thank you. This is just an absolute rich, rich legacy that you've studied, that you've mastered. Well, I probably can't ever say that anyone would master something as ancient as this, but it is a true reverence. And I know I'm a big fan both of what you're offering and you yourself. So,
Bonnie, thank you.
Thank you. I'm so glad you've been here. And again, website, give that to us one more time.
rdeanthomas.com.
All right. It's all right there.
It's my own new line of connoisseur's herbal formulas based on the wisdom of the Chinese Materia Medica. I don't fool around with novel ideas. I go with what's tried and true. Although I have reached that point where I can understand that alchemy to create my own unique formulas.
I love that word alchemy right there with tonic.
Yeah.
Tune up, everyone. Thanks so much for watching Truth Be Told Transformation. I'm Bonnie Burkard. Super happy to be here sharing some fascinating people that have really dedicated their lives to helping us find ways to transform for our highest truth. Speaking of truth, Truth Be Told with Tony Sweet, every Friday. Be here now. Thanks for watching and listening.